This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Hope you had a great weekend and glad you're starting your week listening to 89.3 WRKF. Your numbers locally in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757, toll free. And you can send us an email at any time at talk@talklouisiana.org. Ali Baltazar is producing. And later in the hour, we'll hear from Bernie Pinsonat. He's the noted pollster, of course, who's been with us a few times before. And he'll talk about the election climate. And our two U.S. senators, both Republicans, voted for a tax plan that cleared the Senate Friday night by a vote of 51 to 49. We'll discuss that. And we'll hear from Ann C. Bailey about the largest slave auction in United States history. We start with Elizabeth Crisp, the intrepid reporter for The Advocate. And she is on the front lines of a burning issue around the country that has relevance in Louisiana about sexual harassment. And good morning to you, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
It's nice to talk with you, Elizabeth. This issue is such that The Advocate is actually asking people to come forward anonymously if they have stories of sexual harassment in our government. Have you gotten a response since you made this overture?
Well, it's something that I was kind of doing behind the scenes, just given the national issue, kind of talking to people. There are a lot of people who, you know, have stories of things that they've heard of something happening to somebody else. But when Senator Hewitt and the Legislative Women's Caucus came forward with their own investigations into this, I figured it was a good time just to go ahead and put it out there. If somebody wants to tell their story, obviously it's a story right now that needs to be heard. And so I just thought it was a good opportunity to let people know, you know, if you'd like to talk about it, like, we are interested in hearing it. Like you said, it's a national story. Right now, it's still, when I put it out there, I knew that it would probably be a little while before anything could be reported from it. But right now, it's a lot of people just kind of filling it out, figuring out how to tell their stories.
Senator Hewitt, Elizabeth, is calling for the legislative auditor to investigate the Johnny Anderson resignation, and Johnny Anderson had issues when he was working for Governor Blanco, being accused of sexual harassment, and now it has resurfaced. Where do you think this is going?
With this, I'm not totally sure, and it's been a little unclear from the governor's office necessarily where does this go now that Mr. Anderson has voluntarily resigned, which he says he is innocent of any, he did not, there's no wrongdoing on his part and all of that. But I think that at this point, it appears to be everybody's just kind of looking at how did this person get hired with at least half a dozen women previously. And he was not found guilty of any wrongdoing, but he was not completely absolved of anything either. The investigation kind of stalled previously, but there was there were two women who testified in a. It's kind of bizarre. It was a court case that was not directly. It was kind of a side case that spawned off of this. The president of the university at the time, who had come forward publicly, you know, acknowledging these harassment claims. So two women testified in that court case, and there was a district judge at the time, even though the Southern University's internal investigation did not come up with anything, and the private investigation ordered by Governor Blanco did not conclusively come to anything. The district judge at the time said, you know, these women are credible. So, and there were others who did not testify, and so, you know, it does kind of make you wonder, like, why would the governor put himself in that position of hiring somebody? I guess you can assume that he was like, well, these are old claims, and hope that it doesn't happen again, but obviously it has.
Well, and we have a heightened sensitivity to this issue, mm-hmm. and that's a good thing, but I'm unaware of knowledge of what Mr. Anderson has been accused of doing this time. But do you know anything?
Just things that we've heard, but not anything at this point that I feel comfortable reporting.
All right. Well, Senator Hewitt has taken the lead on this and is calling for her colleagues to take some kind of action to address this situation.
And with that one thing I would like to point out is the Legislative Women's Caucus did start looking into the legislature's own policies before Senator Hewitt's letter went out.
Mm-hmm. Well, this isn't a climate in which the Louisiana House has been accused of being a good old boys club. Last year, Representative Havert had that measure that he proposed a weight limit and an age limit on strippers. It was laughed at when he proposed it as though it were a big joke, and then he got a lot of backlash. How is the atmosphere now? Is there more caution in these kinds of issues today than there was a year or two ago?
Especially now since we've had the holidays and there hasn't been quite as much activity at the Capitol, it's kind of a little harder to tell. But I think there probably will be a different atmosphere when they come back early next year.
All right. Now, a listener on a different note asks about Mike Edmondson, the now embattled former head of state police. He was on the front page of The Advocate Friday and Saturday, and now there appears to be an investigation involving him. This is something that I guess is a black eye, not only for the current administration, which reappointed him, but also Bobby Jindal, who had him as head of state police for 8 years. Your thoughts?
I have to give a lot of credit to my colleague, Jim. He's done a great job keeping up with this story. It's been a while since Mike Edmondson resigned, starting off with the story about the, quote, side trip that was taken by the troopers, like they went to Las Vegas and all of this stuff. I think that there were a lot of people who thought that Mike Edmondson would resign and this kind of would all go away. And now it just seems like it's really moving to a point where it's getting a lot worse. It's still to be seen what will come of it. The legislative auditor's probe into this, it's still in draft form, which is the copy of which Jim obtained. And so I think Edmondson at this point has still said that he is going to reply to the legislative auditor and isn't really commenting much further into the findings of it. But it really is, Colonel Edmondson was, before Bobby Jindal brought him on to head the state police, he was the guy who served as the top security for the LSU football coaches.
many of them.
Yes. So I know previously I talked to Colonel Edmondson, and he said he still stays in touch with Nick Saban, and so... and I know that he had been close to Les Miles and mm-hmm. all of that. So it's kind of interesting. It's going to be interesting to see where all that goes and what ends up coming out of that.
Well, Mike Edmondson's a charming guy. He was popular with the media, and he told me recently before all this news broke that when he was named one of the 10 best-dressed men in Baton Rouge, when he was walking out on the runway, he got a call on his cell phone from none other than Nick Saban. So he and Coach Saban are good friends, and certainly Colonel Edmondson deserves an opportunity to respond to whatever the legislative auditor produces in his report. It's good to talk with you, Elizabeth Crisp, and let's do it again soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Elizabeth Crisp, reporter for The Advocate. We're going to switch gears and talk some politics with a man who follows it quite closely, Bernie Pinsonat, the longtime pollster of Southern Media and Opinion Research. There's a big vote on a tax measure Friday night in the U.S. House. Senators Cassidy and Kennedy voted yay. Bernie Pinsonat, is this going to help them or hurt them, or is it too early to tell?
Well, It was in the Senate, and
did I say House?
Yes.
Okay.
It was in the Senate.
It was the Senate
or Congress. You could say either one.
Yeah, it was. I
think it's a positive vote for him. I mean, the Democrats are screaming because of probably the biggest impact as far as they're concerned, which may hurt some of the Republicans, but in the bigger states with the higher taxes, upper income, which they don't seem to ever want to protect, and now they are screaming about the taking away the deduction on your taxes will increase taxes on those people pretty heavily. So, of course, they're complaining about the deficit. Well, in Louisiana, both of those things are popular as far as not increasing the deficit. The Democrats claiming they didn't want the deficit. So I think it's a big plus for them here.
All right, hold tight. 877-217-5757, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us. Bernie Pinsonat is in studio, the well-versed pollster. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 877-217-5757 or 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. I mentioned the United States Senate Friday night, 51-49 vote, with two Louisiana senators among the 51, John Kennedy and Bill Cassidy, passed a tax measure that now goes to conference. The House passed an earlier measure. There are some distinctions. The Senate bill has seven tax brackets. The House only had four. Those are the kinds of things that need to be worked out. But it is a sweeping plan and probably the biggest budget overhaul in 30 years or more since 1986, so that'd be 31 years. And Bernie Pinsonat says the two U.S. senators from Louisiana probably will not get any major opposition for voting for this measure, but nationally polls show that it's unpopular among the nation as a whole. But Louisiana, as we know, is a different breed of cat. Our state voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump, who received more votes than did John Bel Edwards and David Vitter combined. So are we still Trump country, Bernie Pinsonat?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything that, I think it depends on what, if you look at Trump overall, is he as popular as his election? Probably not, but there's a distinction and you have to always be aware of it. The Democrats don't put anyone up from who could get a decent amount of votes in Louisiana. You can't run somebody like Hillary Clinton, who's very unpopular in Louisiana. If Donald Trump's vote, you could say, was about 30 or 40% anti-Clinton, anti-liberals and all that. So, yeah, he varies on particular issues, but overall he's going to win Louisiana because he doesn't have any real opposition.
Well, Louisiana has not gone to a Democrat in a presidential election since 1996,
right.
And that was Bill Clinton. But today, I'm not even sure Louisiana would go to a Democrat if the nominee were John Bel Edwards. He would have a difficult time carrying his home state in a presidential election. So the Democrats focus on other states, and perhaps for good reason. They've pretty much written off the South.
Yes, that's one of the things that, I think they saw coming. I saw coming. I saw Louisiana years ago. I said Louisiana isn't red any longer. It's fire engine red. It's just the voters in Louisiana are so anti-Northeast liberals, whatever else, that the Nancy Pelosi's and Harry Reid were icons for why voters in the South and in Louisiana voted against anyone they threw up as far as Democrats. So, the reason Trump won was remarkable because he went in, he crossed the blue wall, they called it.
In Wisconsin and Pennsylvania.
Yeah, the Democrats have felt safe because as long as they could do well up there and go into Virginia and Florida, then that's how Obama was elected. But Trump turned that around and not only carried Florida, but he carried some of their states. So the South is not going to vote for a Democrat, not for a long time.
There's some demographic shifts that could make Texas a player, Georgia, Florida. But then Florida already is a swing state. But But this time around, the 11 SEC states all went to Donald Trump, and to show how things change over time, and 40 years ago, the 11 SEC states all went to a guy named Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
877-217-5757, Chris in Prairieville. Chris, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Bernie Pinsonat.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make an observation that I've noticed that I think the Republicans use effectively to the detriment of probably the rest of, you know, our democracy as a whole. But, you know, there are issues that a lot of voters down here especially are, you know, make them single-issue voters like abortion. And I don't think that the conservatives ever really have any intention of overturning Roe versus Wade, because then they would lose that that issue for a lot of Catholics and other things. And, you know, so I feel like they find these wedge issues or these, you know, sort of incendiary things that they can latch certain demographics groups onto, and they'll use that against them as long as they can.
Yeah, you can add guns to that. You can add religion.
Guns and gays.
Yeah, religion. So, yeah, the Republicans, these are things that are Southern voters feel very strongly about. And of course, the anti-Washington, the anti-more government regulations, all of those things are things that Southern voters tend to gang up against Democrats on.
Now, Roy Moore in Alabama is expected to win a week from tomorrow. And here's a guy who's an accused pedophile. But I would think that a lot of the constituents in Alabama and in southern states, and maybe some in other places, think that a man at 32 approaching a 14-year-old girl is better than a man having consensual relations with another man of an adult vintage. It's that's where we are in the South.
Well, I don't know. I would say right now that Roy Moore would have been in, I don't know if he would have even had a decent shot, but with the revelations in Washington of members of the Senate and Congress coming about the same time, and then the politics of it took over. And it's not about Roy Moore. It is about, do the voters of Alabama want to send a Democrat to Washington? And we had the same thing with Vitter. Vitter ran against a decent guy, Charlie Melanson, who was a congressman. But Charlie will tell you that people were not going to send him to Washington to be a vote for Barack Obama. It didn't matter about David Vitter. It mattered about sending a Democrat to Washington. And that's what's happening with Moore. He will win because the revelations of, you know, the guy from Minnesota's not resigning. Why should he? Was Franken?
Well, Franken's not accused of being involved with an underage girl. Roy Moore is.
Well, it doesn't matter. Look.
Well, I know what you're saying, Bernie. But there is a degree of culpability here. What Al Franken did was terrible, but it's not of the same magnitude as what Roy Moore is accused of doing, and it's more than one woman who's accused him of this. And he's saying they're all lying, every one of them. That's his story, and he's sticking to it.
Well, yeah, look, the bottom line is, at this point in time, I'm not going to get into whether he is or he isn't. The reason they're going to vote for him is because, you know, unless something absolutely more, you know, he's caught red-handed, and or I guess you'd say that somebody comes up with a picture of him, he's probably going to win this election, because it's not about what he's done or what he hasn't done. It's about sending a Democrat to Washington to vote against their president. And Alabama is a very strong supporter, and they're not going to send someone up there who's going to vote against everything Donald Trump puts up. So it's just that simple. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but in polling, we saw that with David Vitter. It didn't matter what David Vitter did. He was the only choice Louisiana voters had, so they were not going to send Charlie up there to replace him no matter what he did.
Well, the Republicans, as a listener notes, could refuse to seat Roy Moore.
Well, that's very possible. And you know what?
See it coming, though.
Yeah.
I don't see it coming.
I wouldn't say that I wouldn't see it. I wouldn't say that. You know, they can get rid of him now and probably run the guy who's still sitting there.
Well, if Mike Yenny can remain as president of Jefferson Parish, yep. Roy Moore can be seated in the U.S. Senate.
This episode in United States history, as far as the groping of women and all of the scandals that's is produced from the news media to Hollywood to the halls of Congress, you know, is like nothing we've ever seen. And I don't know how where it's going or how long it's going to go on, but apparently we're going to have this with us for quite a while. And I don't see any end to it. It's, you know, we have it in the governor's office in Louisiana. So, gee, how do you poll all this stuff? Everybody's against it, but it depends on the particular situation. It depends on whose ox is being gored.
877-217-5757. We'll go to the phone lines with Bernie Pinsonat after this news break with Karen Henderson on WRKN. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us on Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. 877-217-5757 is your number. 877-217-5757 works anywhere. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. Bernie Pinsonat is with us, the veteran pollster from Southern Media and Opinion Research. He used to work for J. Bennett Johnston, a conservative Democrat. There aren't many of those left in our world anymore, but at least not at the national level. They're a dying breed, Bernie.
Yeah, it's a shame, because you look at Senator Bennett Johnston. He was moderate. He would be conservative compared to the Democrats today, but he was very moderate. He spent all his time trying to help Louisiana. He brought a lot of money to the universities. Spent a lot of time with the Corps of Engineers on keeping the Mississippi River, and I was right there with him, the coastal stuff. Bennett was very engaged in Louisiana, spent a lot of time here. We don't have that kind of representation at this point in time.
877-217-5757, your number. Still time to talk with Bernie. Coming next, Ann C. Bailey. Her book is about the largest slave auction in American history. Andy in Goodwood. Hi, Andy. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Bernie, as a moderately high-income white Democrat, 56 years old. In a way, I'm pulling for Roy Moore for the simple reason I think it would be better for the Democrats to run against the Republicans supporting and allowing a guy like this to be in their party, despite the fact that Democrats, we have John Conyers, who probably needs to go too. Is this good for the country? Thank you.
Well, I think it's good for the country in this respect, because I've been in politics a long time and I saw it, and you run into this a lot, and it's almost standard where there's somebody of power and there are people under them. I knew of a couple senators when I worked for Bennett Johnson who had that reputation. You see it around government. You see it around big companies. You see it around. And if you talk to some of these women and they are need their job and they're subject to that. So if it doesn't do anything else then stop this or call attention to it, where women can get promoted or not feel like they're under the threat of having to do anything and everything somebody who supervises them, yeah, it's great for the country, because it's not something that I have a daughter. I don't want her to go through that.
Well,
and we all see it and we all have heard about it.
When I was a kid in high school in Little Rock, my congressman at that time, Wilbur Mills, who was the most powerful man in the U.S. House of Representatives, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, he had to resign as a result of his relationship with Fannie Fox. And that was, as bad as it was, a consensual affair. But here we have a man who hasn't even been elected, Roy Moore, who's accused by numerous women of sexual misconduct, and he may win. In the old days, he would have been out immediately. Gone. See you.
Well, but this election is caught up in national politics about parties. And Alabamans don't want to send a Democrat to Washington. It doesn't really matter about Roy Moore. I'm sure if they could pick someone other than Roy Moore, who's a Republican, tomorrow, they would do it. But they don't have that choice, and there's no way to stop the train, because neither candidate can get off at this point in time. But what happens to Roy Moore, you know, in the future may hurt Republicans more than him being elected. It's what they do once he gets there.
877-217-5757 for Bernie Pinsonat. David in Atlanta. Hi, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. Remember Elizabeth Ray? She was a secretary for a Republican congressman, I think from Ohio, and she couldn't type. Evidently, there was a sexual relationship, and when she was relieved from her duty, she posed for Playboy, and she was flat gorgeous. You know, if Roy Moore is elected, there's a Supreme Court precedent I read where the Senate must seat him, but they, of course, can kick him out. I think if Alabama elects Roy Moore as a liberal Democrat, it would be a huge backlash in the 2018 election. Women, I think, will turn out in huge numbers to vote against Republicans if they don't kick this guy, if he's elected, out of the Senate.
Man, I don't buy that because of the problems the Democrats have.
Well, and
we haven't seen the end of this. There's going to be more. I mean,
Billy Bush writes an op-ed piece in the New York Times, and he says that definitely was Donald Trump on that Access Hollywood tape. And it is interesting that Donald Trump won a national election despite these same kinds of allegations.
Look, it's not going to affect either party. They're both hoping that something else surfaces that they can talk about besides this, because they're both guilty and there's no end in sight to the revelations. But as far as one party having a huge advantage over the other, it's just not going to happen.
You worked on Capitol Hill, though, Bernie. Was this kind of behavior going on and people just didn't talk about it?
Yes, absolutely. There was... Look, it's no secret that Ted Kennedy was one of them. I mean, he was not only Kennedy, but I'm sure it was going on in Congress. But you look at the rumors at that point in time, there was a lot of stuff about Kennedy as far as rumors. I don't know if it was true.
I imagine there were some rumors about guys from Louisiana, too.
Well, you had rumors about one who actually admitted to having paying prostitutes, but I really didn't know of any Louisiana.
All right.
But it was always there. There were always rumors, and it's certainly not something new to the United States Congress.
Chuck and Scott. Hi, Chuck. You're on Talk Louisiana with Bernie Pinsonat.
Good morning. I'm interested in your take on Governor Edwards, and I'm a supporter of his and a fan of his, but just curious how he managed to beat Vitter and what are his chances of a second term, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's who the candidate is. The I don't think he beat Vitter. The Republicans beat Vitter when you spend $2 or $3 million the last 14 days and destroy him, literally destroy him. When he got into the runoff, he was, he was dead politically. So, John Bell. But I'll go back and point out something to you. One of the things that bothers me is you had about 130,000, 140,000 people didn't even bother to vote in that. That was one of the worst turnouts as far as a governor's race that we've seen. The year before, you had, what I'm saying is, when you had the United States Senate election, you had 138 or 142,000
more people voted.
Yeah, lot more people voted. When Blanco and Jindal had their big, it was like 254,000, I think, had voted more. So, well, if Republicans turned out in that election, would he have won? Probably not. But
last week, Bernie, getting to Chuck's question about the 2019 race, I think we saw evidence that John Kennedy is looking strongly at this race. He came out against the criminal justice reform, which was a bipartisan effort. The governor was for it. And by the way, so was David Vitter, who was down at the Capitol as a chief lobbyist for it. And Vitter is, for all intents, John Kennedy's mentor. So John Kennedy, he is going after this governor every step of the way.
Well, that's correct. And, Kennedy gets to run and he gets a free shot, but there's also someone else in the background that everybody's starting to talk about a lot more than they're talking about Kennedy, and it's Congressman Steve Scalise.
If he desires to run, he would be a formidable candidate. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on with Bernie Pinsonat.
Yes. Didn't Louisiana lose out on actually having the Speaker of the House because Bob Livingston got caught up in his own hypocrisy after being one of the strongest against Clinton, and then he got caught with his own infidelities?
Absolutely correct.
Yeah. That was after Bernie left Capitol Hill, but another evidence of a Louisiana congressman having issues. Wanda in area code 70809. Wanda, you're on.
Okay, thank you. I was listening to the, you had a topic about the tax bill that passed late Friday night, early Saturday morning. I just wanted to call and state, what good does it do to call your congressman to say, please vote against it because it's going to hurt me? Because that tax bill will hurt me. I'm at an income, me and my husband are at an income level where we don't reach the threshold to claim, we can't itemize, in other words. We can't claim our mortgage on our interest on our mortgage or chattel contributions. We can't claim those against, you know, for our taxes purposes. We do the long form, but we don't have enough to itemize. And my fear is this, is kind of like this tax bill is going to financially hurt me and my husband. And I try to convey that to both of my Cassidy and Kennedy. You know, I made calls to say, please vote against this bill because it's going to hurt me. And I'm not the only one out there. I'm a retired state employee. I'm in my 60s. And just because I hear say, oh, it's going to create jobs. Well, who's going to hire a 60-year-old retired woman? No one.
Bernie?
Well, I don't know the details of the bill. In fact, we don't really know the details of the bill yet because they now have to go to conference and they have to work it out. The good thing about it is it does give the both sides more time to look at what people are complaining about, and they are getting their complaints. There are people like you right now, your problem, I'm sure there's thousands, tens of thousands, maybe a million other people who are complaining about your particular situation. So will they listen? Will they take those features out of those rules and regs out? I don't know. But there, whatever passed last week, Friday night or actually Saturday morning in the Senate is now going to be reworked, and it has to be reconciled with the House version.
All right, we only have about 30 seconds, Bernie, but this one may take 30 minutes to answer, but you got 30 seconds. Will the Russia investigation cause any Louisiana office holders to vacate their support of Donald Trump?
No, absolutely not.
This will be the last state where that happens.
Right.
And for good reason. The man got more votes than any candidate in the history of our state.
Yeah. And
these are Republicans. Yeah. It's their base.
And, well, the other thing is... That so-called issue is almost like the sex scandal. You got new revelations now about...
Well, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Okay, and we'll talk with you again soon, I hope. Bernie, thank you very much. Ann C. Bailey is next, and we're back after this pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. We're joined now by Ann C. Bailey. She's a writer, historian, and professor of history of Africana studies at SUNY Binghamton. And in her works of nonfiction, she combines elements of travel, adventure, history, and an understanding of contemporary issues with an accessible style. And this is on display in vivid terms in The Weeping Time, her latest work. In March of 1859, on two stormy days, 436 men, women, and children, including 30 babies, were put up for sale. That's the premise of the book, and Anne, it is good to talk with you.
It's great to be here, Jim. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, this is a riveting story, and it affects many parts of our country, including Louisiana, the largest slave sale in Georgia history. What happened in March of 1859?
Well, what was interesting about this sale, Jim, is that even though it was the largest sale in American history, the fact is that this was quite a common occurrence all over the country, but of course, particularly in the South. There would be slave auctions on a regular basis, and I liken it to stock trading today. It was a very important part of our economy. So this sale was noteworthy because there was such a large group. They were from this area called the Gullah Geechee community, southeastern Georgia, southeastern South Carolina, and southern Florida. This is an area of African Americans, which they have a very strong connection to the African continent in terms of their culture and language and traditions. Part of it is because they'd hardly ever been sold, you know? They were really, you know, even though they were slaves and they had gone through a difficult experience as slaves, they still had kind of a tight-knit community. So for them to be sold away from the place they called home and from each other was particularly noteworthy.
Well, they were sold to buyers from the Carolinas, Virginia, Alabama, Georgia, and Louisiana. Lovers were separated from lovers, sisters from brothers, parents from children. The largest recorded slave auction in U.S. history, and it is detailed in graphic terms in Weeping Time, from our guest, Ann C. Bailey. Now, Ann, how did you get on the trail of this story?
It's a good question. I got interested in slave auctions through Thomas Jefferson. I was looking very carefully at the history of Thomas Jefferson's Monticello, and I was trying to stay up to date on this whole question of his slave mistress, Sally Hemings. And in looking at those records, I noticed that when he died, he put 140 of his slaves up for auction. So a number of the children with Sally Hemings received their freedom, but the rest were put up for auction because he was in debt. That just really struck me. Now, you know, of course, I've always been like most Americans. We consider Thomas Jefferson a hero because that groundbreaking document is still groundbreaking all these hundreds of years later, and it helped to build the United States. So he will not be forgotten because of that. But the fact is that at the same time, you know, he was also a slave owner and he was in debt, and this is what you did when you were in debt. And so the word auction just became, it was in sharp relief for me. And so, you know, all of a sudden I realized this was something that was an everyday occurrence. This is something that people did. What must that have meant for those people, those families, because this is what this is about? What kind of trauma did they undergo because of the death of one man? So that got me on the trail, and then I wanted to find a good test case, and I thought that this would be an excellent case because it happens just before the Civil War. So it would give me an opportunity to show what happened after the auction, and so the story is not just about the auction, but what took place when they fought for their freedom, what took place when they got their freedom, and leading all the way up to today, where they settled after that, how they made a life for themselves or remade a life for themselves, you know, after that long chapter of slavery.
What were some of the indignities of the auction block that are so vivid even today as you recount them?
I think as a woman, I certainly can, you know, relate to the fact that, you can relate, I just think, as a human being to any of the stories, but certainly as a woman, when I think about the fact that part of being sold is that you inspect the property, the thing that you're about, the person that you're about to purchase is property. So, you know, having to be touched in ways that would be inappropriate, we would find inappropriate today. Very often one of the things that potential buyer would look for is whether or not you were healthy or whether you were pretending to be ill. Sometimes slaves pretended to be ill so that they would not be bought by a particular owner that they thought would not be, you know, very kind or very helpful or what have you. So just the idea that your whole body was being inspected in a way that just takes away your dignity. And I think what I saw, though, in some of these stories, and I got this from some of the contemporary sources from a newspaper that was recording this at the time, is that in spite of those indignities, those men and women really tried to find a way to be proud, if you will, and to hold on to whatever dignity they did have. So in other words, they were dehumanized, but it was a dehumanizing situation, but it did not take away their humanity. And that inspired me. That inspired me a great deal.
Well, this massive sale, in today's terms, we would be shocked at how low the amount was to sell human beings. But it is remarkable when we put it in perspective. 1859 was only 158 years ago.
Very true. Very true.
It's not that long ago.
It's not that long ago. And I think, as you point that out, every now and again, in some quarters, people will say, well, you know, slavery was a long time ago, and it's just time to move on. This is why it's difficult to move on, is because it's in relative terms, it's just a few generations away from the present. And there's something about that kind of trauma that people went through that doesn't just go away without very, very positive interventions, positive and consistent interventions, if you will. And I think that's why I think there's been a lot of progress, obviously, in Black communities, in this particular Black community. That's why I trace the descendants in the book, so you can see that, you know, the descendants of the auction, many of them, thank God, are doing very well. To me, they're very exemplary people in many ways. They're real role models, I could say. That's encouraging, the ones that I've met that are really role models in the Black community. But obviously, there are people in the Black community across the country who are still not, you know, they're still suffering from some of the legacy of slavery. There's still vestiges of this past which are still with us. So that's a cautionary tale as well.
1859, this happened at a site that you detail. What has happened to the location, and what did it look like then?
The location now is, back then it was, you know, they were literally brought from, Darien is the town, the main town where they were brought to, from the Butler Estates and taken to Savannah. So Savannah, Georgia was where they were sold, and they were taken in railroad cars to Savannah, to the auction house of a Joseph Bryan, who was a kind of a well-known auctioneer. And, you know, from there, they were then transported to what is called, it was a race course, basically. It was a big place with horses and stalls and so forth, where the rich would come to watch races. And this was the place where they ended up being sold. This was the site of the auction house for that. Those 2 days, that's where they auctioned the slaves. So this was kind of interesting, too, just to think mm-hmm. that they were human beings being sold in the stalls, in and amongst the stalls of animals. So that was another, perhaps, dehumanizing factor. When you look at, and you know, fast forward to 150-plus years today, something really wonderful has happened with that site and the reclamation of that site. And people in Savannah, including some descendants and scholars and officials and others have come together and commemorate. They put a wonderful commemorative plaque there to remind us that this took place. And so there's just a little park area and a plaque that shows what took place. You know, we were otherwise you would not know because, of course, it's completely different in terms of the terrain. But at least there's a way to remember the people who were sold there. And to remember their lives and to honor them, if you will.
Well, lastly, Anne, when you talk to these descendants, what kind of emotions were in play, not only for them but for you?
I think bittersweet. I think we underestimate, Jim, all of us, the power of knowing who you are, even the difficult parts of who you are, meaning your history. And I don't think there's a human being among us that can't look back and say there's some difficult parts of our history, different kinds of histories, but nonetheless, there are difficult things that your families have gone through or are going through. And I think when you can look past those difficulties, know them, understand them, and realize that you are potentially on the other side of some of those difficulties, really very powerful. And that's what I think I see in them, is this incredible resilience and this sense that just by surviving and doing well in their own lives, they are honoring the people of the past. And I just think we need more like them, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. I think we need more people like this, particularly in the Black community, who know the specifics of their history, right? Not just this kind mm-hmm. of general broad brush, but really know what their ancestors did in contributing to the building up of America and what they went through, and it helps to give them a roadmap for the future.
The book is one of the most significant of our time, The Weeping Time, Memory and the Largest Slave Auction in American History, published by Cambridge University Press. Thank you, Anne C. Bailey.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.